All right, welcome to Creating Cashflow for July 9th, 2023. Helen, are you there? Oh, Helen, I've never seen you with your flowing hair down. I did not even recognize you.
Yeah.
Well done. Looks really beautiful.
You.
Okay, so Helen is a cash flow kitten who is some sort of interior stylist, interior designer. We're figuring that out in addition to being an artist, an actor. So, first of all, these victories, congratulations. You finished up with your first client, you took final pictures to edit and post on social media, and you got a final payment. That's even great. You got great feedback. You sent over interview questions that she's going to voice memo all the answers to you for. That's so much easier than scheduling. Well done. You named your price for another friend, and the first client is going to refer you to another person who you've already met briefly, and you're feeling inspired and encouraged to take more action. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Amazing. Okay, so the first question is, you'd like to keep workshopping the language you're using to describe your services. You're feeling some resistance to calling yourself an interior designer and feel more comfortable with interior stylist, but then people don't really know what that is. I'm not sure it's totally accurate, you wrote. And your first client has already given you some great feedback about the different ways that you provided value for her, and you want to kind of process some of that. So let's talk about this first. So what did she say?
Well, it was funny. She's also a coach. She's like an executive coach. So she like is into this language stuff. And what was funny is I kind of casually was like, yeah, I'm not quite sure. I'm interested in your feedback because I'm trying to figure out like what to call myself and like what the exact services are. And, I'm figuring out all of that. I feel a little weird saying interior designer. And she was like, oh, because you do so much more. And I was like, oh, no, because I feel like I'm not a trained designer. And because like I imagine that like what people are expecting are like an HGTV like before and after level, like there's also something I and she immediately was like, that's imposter syndrome. I was like trying to talk me out of it. So I'm still kind of working through why I have this resistance. I mean, some of it is just because it's new and I'm, freshly, getting my sea legs or whatever the metaphor you want to use. But then some of it is because I'm also getting a handle on what services I want to offer. Because I think it will vary a little bit person to person. Yeah. And then designer, like there's plenty of designers who don't have formal training. So I'm not super hung up about that. But there is something about designer which feels like, yeah, there's some imposters, it like expert, and and that I'm gonna come in and I'll be like, I'll take your input on what you're looking for, but then here is my vision that we are executing. And I think something that I've enjoyed so far with her, and then even with some of my, pre-client, not paying people, friends, is I kind of like the puzzle. It's a little more like, I think of it a little more like coaching, which I haven't. And because I'm like, oh, I understand the puzzle of like, you need X, Y, and Z. You just don't really understand how to make that happen. I have a different perspective and I can help you make that happen. So, I don't know that I want to get into the having to further explain, like, I'm an interiors coach. Like that, I don't think that's what I want to do. But and maybe it's just getting more comfortable with that is part of being a designer is something. And then the other thing that she offered, again, using smart coach language, she was like, you offer three different things, really. You offer consulting, you offer coaching, and you offer execution. So it's kind of a mix of those things. 'Cause like there's the consulting where I'm like, well, here's what I would do. And here's a bunch of links and here's the mood board. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's the coaching, which is a little bit more what we've talked about before of like rent my brain. She was like, so grateful for all the times that she texted me saying like, should I buy this? And I was like, no, for these reasons. She was like, you saved me from myself a lot. And then the execution is like, I'm over there doing the actual styling, or I'm helping. Again, it's kind of consulting again, or coaching, where I'm like, okay, you're going to go get the thing for this wall, like the art piece. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of going to become your project. I'm not in charge of finding the thing, but I'm going to send you off thinking like it should be about this size. It would be nice if it were this material or this thing. You know, I'm giving her parameters and stuff. And she found that very valuable. And like, and one of the concepts that I helped her like really wrap her head around was just scale. Like I made her get rid of a little a cute but too small TV console thing. And we got like a much bigger thing. And she's like, my mind is blown. I never even would have thought about scale. And like, it's just like, that is a piece of furniture. I guess you get one of those. So that's exciting. And I don't, you know, I'm in the intro stations. How do I make that all palatable for people?
Yeah. You're going to find your way there. And she has given you, you know, a way to flesh out the description when you're talking to different people. You know, I do some of this and this and this, depends on the client. It's usually a mix,
yeah,
with the ratios depending on the client. You're going to find, you're going to stumble across, as they fall out of your mouth, little phrases and yeah, things that you're like, oh, okay, this is my language.
Yeah.
So you're going to discover that. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay. Because even in the recent days since doing this, people have been like, you know, as the clearest thing I can say is like, I have my first client. And then they're like, what do you do? And I'm like, I help. You know, like, and I say more than that, but then I'm just like, well, yeah.
I think I would start until you discover a better thing to call yourself. Just call yourself an interior designer.
Yeah.
You're the one who has defined designer to mean right, this and this and this much training and blah. Anyone who's hiring you is someone who cannot do it as well as you can.
Right. Right.
And they're not hiring the fancy pants people because it's too big, too expensive, too much. And that person, honestly, Kelly Wurstler can't speak to me in my language.
I know. That's what I'm like, I'm not Kelly Wurstler.
but your clients don't want her.
Right.
Because she's intimidating,
yeah,
and expensive. And they would feel embarrassed, even if Kelly would be fine with it. They would feel embarrassed if they couldn't afford the $400 ottoman that she would probably want them to buy. You know, they're going to feel so comfortable with you. You are their interior designer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the more you just allow yourself to own that, the more no one else is going to have a problem with it either. And if someone's like, oh, did you study it? You can just, I mean, I didn't study anything. I've never studied anything. It's a theater in college. So you just go, oh, nope, I'm self-taught. I've just been doing it and doing it and doing it. And now I get paid for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know what people are going to go? Okay. All of your clients are going to go, great.
Yeah. I think I'm worried for the times that I get someone who is, I mean, I guess they just won't be my client, but just in conversation, feeling intimidated by the possibility of someone who is also like a design enthusiast, which is what I would like call myself for a while. And I'm like, oh, we might know actually about the same amount. I've just decided to charge for it. And now I feel challenged. I don't know, this is all hypothetical and unnecessary, yeah, I suppose, but yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
So you can throw that obstacle in your path if you want to, or you can not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you will there, we can sit here and scare you to death and come up with all these different scenarios of all the people you'll meet who will just be, oh, who do you think you are? You know? So you're not going to change them. There's nothing you can say, so you don't have to say anything.
Yeah.
There's no interior design police who are going to arrest you.
Yeah.
So make your clients happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe this is too much of a third question, but kind of related to that, I'm just also starting to, I have more work to do. And as you said, I'm going to discover the language, but I'm also going like, oh, who are my ideal clients? A friend asked me that today. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, like for a while it was like dudes who have no idea what they're doing, but they don't want to pay me. And then now it's like maybe moms who feel a little, who are like have some interest, but are feeling a little overwhelmed. And it's like, I'm kind of like your design wife, you know, like, and I don't know how to be kitschy with my branding.
Yeah. I wouldn't, at this point, since you've had women clients, mm-hmm. you don't need to be gender specific. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think you should narrow it down to, it's not about like what the person does in life or who they are in life. It's more, I would ask you, what is the commonalities in their frustrations that they are reaching out to somebody like you?
Right.
People who have a certain concept and have a certain taste, but don't know how to get it out of their head and into their room.
Right.
Because I know what I like. I have taste, but I don't know how to put it together. I don't know how to make it happen around me. I just know what I like.
Right. Right.
So categorize your people more around the commonalities of their needs and frustrations that you then help with.
Okay.
My ideal clients are people who are, you know, frustrated with this or mm-hmm. having this issue
mm-hmm.
or who are super, who are feeling like they're really ready to give some TLC to their environment and they just aren't sure where to start or how to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Or what to do in the middle. That's a really funny way to say it. How to start, how to finish, or what to do, or kind of stuck in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And as your business evolves, you might fall into, oh my God, these are the people that I want to talk to. But until then, keep it broad.
Yeah.
People who are frustrated. Yeah. And so your second question was, you wrote, this is related to your victory of having a new client on the horizon where the scope of work could be large. And I'd like to talk about payment schedules and agreements with friends. She told me she'd follow your lead on this. So it feels like a great opportunity to set a solid foundation. Yep. 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 Yeah. So where are you having...
I guess this is, I don't know that I have a specific question. I think I'm using this time to just process out loud.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
There was like a water pipe accident in their home and they're like living in an Airbnb for a while. And then they're either going back there or maybe moving to a new place. One of the more recent thing that she did is she sent me a Zillow listing and was like, I love this place. My husband doesn't think it's right. Can you help me convince him? Like, I'll pay you to like talk to him about design so that he likes it. And I'm like, what is this weird? What? So I'm gonna talk to them about that. But then also she named like 7 to 8 rooms in the other place or possible new place of that she would want to do. And she's like, and I know it's going to take time. And like, I'm open to you, like adjusting your pricing as time goes on. Like I fully understand. I think it just still is so new to me to be like, and this is what it costs. And this is what you, because I don't even fully have a,
mm-hmm.
firm understanding of what I'm then going like, this is what it costs and this is what you get.
Right.
For what it costs. I'm like, you get me, you get my time and attention and some resources and all of that, but I don't have like, and here's the defined list with the boundaries already in place. So then we can be like tidy about it. Like it just right. doesn't feel tidy yet.
Yeah.
And maybe what I'm looking for is permission for it to not be perfectly tidy to start.
Oh, permission granted. And here's the thing. It's like, it's hard also organizing is similar to design, where a person's like, well, how long is this room going to take? And it's like, oh, there are factors involved. Mm-hmm. My speed is different than your speed. How granular do you want to get? Like, how much do you want to do without me being there?
Right.
So you can always say to a person, you know, there's a lot of variables involved with the speed of this project, including how much you want to do yourself. I can certainly give you guidance so you can be doing work that you're not paying me for, or you can have me do a lot of the execution. So you're letting them know that they're controlling the foot on the gas.
Right.
And to start, I think what you might say is this. There's two things that we have to kind of agree on. The first is the phase one of this project. Just you have, no matter if a person's like, I want to do this whole room, it's like, okay, but what's phase one of the room? Or if they want to do multiple rooms, okay, well, what's phase one?
Right.
So you guys have to agree on what the first chunk of the project is going to be.
Yeah, it feels, define it.
Right. Mm-hmm. You can define the entire project, but then really, really hone in on what's phase one. Boundaries, scope. So you both know when it's done.
Yeah, that's how it, even in the last thing, I was like, it kind of feels like this might never feel done. And part of the reason I was like, let's do pictures, because that to me is like, we're done. It is documented, done.
Yes. Phase one of that room is done. That's the thing. That's why I do this. This phases thing is going to be very helpful for you, because rooms are like websites. Websites are never fully finished. There's always, you do, and then you're like, oh, but I'm going to, but you have to complete something, because that's a very good feeling for a client to have of completion. And if you can put in their brain that you guys are working on completing phase one of this room.
Right.
And if they ever want to do phase two, you're open to it, but we've got to finish.
Right.
So that's the first thing you have to agree on and get the specifics. And then the second is, okay, how many hours do you want to put in the bank with me to start with? 5, 10, or 15? That's what I would do. So, and then they prepay you. They put 5 hours in the bank, or they put 10 hours in the bank.
Yeah.
And then you guys are always on this negotiation and feedback loop about how much time you've spent. So what do you want me to do with our 5 hours?
Do you,
this is what,
I'm sorry, with the hours thing, do you mean like, I set an hourly rate and they buy hours?
You can set a package rate.
Okay.
5, 10, 15 hours. But honestly, I don't actually think you need to discount your rate. Like, it's cheaper if you buy 15 hours. You can, but I don't actually think you have to. I think you should have, this is my hourly rate.
Yeah.
And I think that you can have your consulting. This is how I would do your business. I would have a consulting hourly rate for when people are like, can you please talk to my husband and convince him about this thing, these weird one-off conversational things. So you have your consulting hourly rate, which is higher than your design hourly rate. But your design hourly rate can only be bought in clumps of time, 5 hours, 10 hours, 15 hours. And you're giving people three options. So they can decide, but they have to pay it. They have to pay it. So if they, quote, want to pay in installments, then they would pay you for 5 hours up front instead of 15 hours up front. But if they know, oh my God, no, we are going to do this whole thing and we are going to work together. Here's 15 hours. No problem. It's probably going to be 30 by the time we're done.
Yeah.
And then let's say someone buys 10 hours with you and you guys realize, okay, we're almost finished. It's probably going to take about 5 more hours and they just pay you for 5 more hours. What's that sigh about?
There's two. Mm-hmm. One is I already gave her a price based on per room, which mm-hmm. was probably a mistake. And I feel a little yucky going back on that.
Mm-hmm.
Two, what's tricky about the hourly thing is for the consulting one, I understand. That's like you're mm-hmm. paying for my time to have the conversation and whatever. That's fine. But the design, I'm like, are you paying for the hours that I'm spending scrolling for links? That seems a little not quite right. I mean, because if I'm the one choosing to spend 3 hours, as opposed to like just how do the hours add up, I guess? Is it literal? Are we counting hours only when I'm at the place doing the thing? Are we counting it when I'm making materials, looking for links? I've never done work where it's like, I'm calling my own hours. I've always done like, if it's hourly work, it's like, because I'm there doing the thing for the hour. Mm-hmm. So that is new to me.
Yeah. Now, I understand the like, whoa, but I'm just scrolling for links. Yeah. If you are into a project and you're like, I just want to really make sure I find the right pillow, and you spend 3 hours to find the right pillow, you can just charge her 1 hour. And you put on the invoice 3 hours for online shopping, but you're only being charged for one. So they see your generosity of spirit. And they see that you spent 3 hours finding the right thing for them. So next time they ask you for a thing, it's like, oh, okay, well, this doesn't just take her 5 seconds, because people will underestimate how long it takes you to do things, because people underestimate how long it takes them to do things. But this is you spending your life on someone else's life.
Yeah.
And for you to make money, you have to make money. And for you to make money, sometimes when you do make money, it's not hard work. That's what compensates for the time when it is hard work, or you make a mistake and you have to like spend 3 hours. Like you have to charge so that all your business expenses are covered, so that when you make a mistake, that'll come out in the wash. You have to charge enough so that all of that can happen and you still make a profit. Enough to pay your rent from this and maybe buy a dress every once in a while, you know? So you can't have this in your head where this is the important work that I really get paid for, but the shit work I should only earn $20 an hour for.
Yeah.
It's like, you will scrape by if you do that.
Yeah. I think I'm also a little worried that if I charge by the hour, it will be so expensive.
Well,
because like what I'm learning is this shit takes more time than we all think.
Yeah. Why do you think interior designers cost so much? Because it takes so much time to haggle with people and to place orders and to take measurements, and people are having them do all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you're going to have to get better at is giving people assignments.
Yeah.
And being like, here's how you do that. Here's your assignment. Here's the thing. If you want me to do it, I'll do it, but it will eat into our hours.
Yeah. Okay.
They want to do this project on a budget, which is why they're hiring you, but it can't be the reason they get to do it on a budget is because you're going to do it all for fucking free or nothing. Oh, well, that happened on a budget because she was willing to work for basically nothing. No, no. They get to hire you and it gets to get done on a budget because you're going to give them the assignments and teach them how to do it themselves.
Right.
Or else it doesn't happen on that cheap of a budget.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And my last client, my first client, she was very into having assignments. She was like, okay, so my assignment is this, and I'm going to go do this.
Your clients will need to be those kind of people.
Yeah. And it made me, it made me a little nervous. I was both like excited that she wanted to be so involved, but it also made me a little nervous because I was like, okay, but now I'm having to give up a little bit of like design control because I'm sending you off onto OfferUp and Facebook Marketplace willy-nilly.
You can have more design control if you get more comfortable asking them for money. That's going to be the trade-off.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're doing this in tandem with them because they get to decide how they want you to use the time in the bank.
Right.
You can say, this is how I think I should use the time. And then they can be like, well, blah, 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 but we also want to do this. And you're like, mm-hmm. You're always going to have to give them options. Do you want this or this? Do you want me to do this or this? Should we do this first? Or should we, you know, it's just sort of like if they want to buy a dresser and a couch, are they going to be both kind of middle range? Or is one going to be high and one low? Like, those are the decisions we make all the time.
Right.
And that's the muscle you're going to build in this business.
Totally.
And then you're going to have to watch yourself and maybe not spend 3 hours looking for the perfect thing. And you'll get faster at that. And there have been things that everybody who does any kind of service business has to decide, okay, there's sometimes when I have a learning curve on something that I'm not going to make my client pay for. This is just part of my own research I've done plenty of stuff like that for clients because I could use it for myself or other clients in the future.
Right.
So, but you have to be careful that you're not just over-delivering and exhausting yourself and not making any profit.
Right. Yeah. A lesson I learned in the early days of this client was like, I thought that I was going to really need to provide a whole bunch of like endless mood boards and make like a beautiful deck of like, here's all of the links and here's a beautifully thrown together thing and like perfectly organized. And like what actually happened is and I did that, but I felt like I was constantly behind because she was like text. And I just had to just be like messily texting her links. Yeah. Okay.
I don't think your clients are going to need all that stuff.
Yeah. I think the reasoning behind it was like, oh, this is something that she could then show a friend who's interested.
You know what she'll show her friend? Her pictures on her phone.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, oh my God, you just have to call Helen. That's all you want in a referral. Someone going, you have to call Helen. And the person's like, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what do you think your hourly consulting rate is going to be?
Oh Lord. I charge $120 an hour for other coaching.
Okay. Okay. So why don't you make your hourly consulting rate for now $120 and then just make your design rate $100 an hour. So they either pay you $500, $1,000 or $1,500 upfront.
Okay. So here's the problem. I told her it's $250 a room.
Well, And how long did you think that $250 was? How many hours do you think you were going to spend on that room?
I didn't think.
That's okay. You don't have to go back. Is this the friend that will want you to do multiple rooms and was like, it's okay if your price changes? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do a room for $250 and monitor. I want you to track your time. So you're like, okay, just, we all have these like learning curves and things in the beginning. You only want to do it once and then learn from it and move on. So that's great. So what will help you is when you got, you need to you need to define with her what phase one of this room is for 250. Because if she has in her head, it's soup to nuts. Like this whole room is going to be like designed to the hilt. Yeah. Phase one might be, we need to do floor treatment. We need to get a couch, drapery, and figure out the color. That might be like the bones of doing the room. And maybe accessorizing is like phase two or whatever. You guys figure out phase one. You're going to do it for $250. You, Helen, are going to track your hours so that at the end, when you're like, this is how we're going to work in the future, it's 5, 10, or 15 hours paid up front in the bank. And just so you have a frame of reference, I spent 17 hours on this room. Now, I don't have to spend 17 hours. We can have you do a lot more. You've learned a lot in this phase. Like,
yeah.
But then she gets to decide, am I going to cut you a $500 check, a $1,000 check, or a $1,500 check?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. It's going to take me some time to adjust to hourly, but I understand the logic of it. Yeah.
It's not really hourly. You can just break it down in the math, but what you're really doing is you have three packages and it's just framed in terms of hours, 500, 1,000, 1,500.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. It's a good place to start. And then you, your business will start to tell you what you're going to be able to do and how you prefer to work. And you're going to get to a point where it's like the smallest package. This is the way you give yourself a raise without raising your packet, without raising your prices, is you just do away with the 5 hour. And when someone comes to you and goes, oh, wow, like $100 an hour, that's a lot. Is there a way you can give a discount? And you're like, well, here's the way the discount works. First of all, you can pay as little as 5 hours, which is truly a discount. If you're having anyone help you with any project, 5 hours is kind of like the littlest we could do. And another way that this is discounted is I can use a lot of those 5 hours giving you assignments to go do the legwork. I don't have to be doing all of that. So you are teaching them how to think of discount in a different way than just giving you less money.
Right.
Per hour.
Right. Okay.
Because you have to say what you're paying for is my expertise. And I can use that expertise to give you the assignments to go do so that you're using your time and you're not paying me for that time. But if you want to, I'm happy to also do the execution. Right. So you can use my expertise in different ways. Right. And we can stretch that time if you need me to.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But you guys having a long 1 hour chat about something is an hour of your time, your brain.
Yeah. Well, and I can see how that's also helpful other than room, because what happened with the other person, and of course happens, is we're standing in one room and we're like, ooh, oh, and that could then, and then we are suddenly standing in another room.
Mm-hmm. And that is for, you have to rein in your client. You have, part of what they're paying you for is to not let them get too distracted with their time with you.
Right.
It'd be like you go to a foot surgeon and all of a sudden you're like, I have this little spot on my neck. And the foot surgeon's like, well, we could totally talk about that during our appointment, but I can only help you with your feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're gonna get so good at this. I mean, just the fact that people are already working with you and then thinking of other people who need to work with you. I mean, that's it. That's confirmation that you're really onto something, Helen. I'm so happy for you. Now go get chunks of money.
Yeah.
Up front. Up front. And the reason that this is a better pricing structure for everyone listening, I'm not a huge fan for work like this that can easily have scope creep with the whole pay half up front, half when it's done. It's like, because it is hard to agree when a design project is done. And so that's not a good way to do it. Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Ileana is not here. Hold on. Let me see. Karen Eileen is a cash flow cat. She is a performer and a teacher. And we are talking though about other streams of income. Mm-hmm. I'm glad one of her victories, she wrote, job is no longer a four-letter word.
Mm.
Yay.
It's pretty big.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
So your question was, can we discuss strategy for increasing your income with health insurance?
Correct.
Currently, you're on Obamacare. If you earn too much, you lose that. Mm-hmm. So your job probably needs to have benefits.
I'm doing my tracking, so I'll figure out what my income is for the year. But once I hit a certain level, I mean, we're only halfway through. If I go more than $2,000 or $3,000 above that, then they ask for a big chunk of money back from me at the end of the year because they've given me. So, I just don't know how to think about it. Like, do I need to put all my energy into like not finding 1099 stuff and finding some either part-time or full-time thing with Benny's? Like, I'm not sure how to strategize it, quite honestly.
One of the hardest things are programs that have an income tripwire
yes.
to that. Welfare, food stamps, health insurance.
Yeah.
It's so hard because then you're like, well, what you're incentivized to stay under a certain income limit. Because if you just go a little bit over the income limit, it doesn't serve you well because then you are all of a sudden paying for health insurance. It's so, this is a transition point that yeah. trips up a lot of people.
I feel that, which is why I wanted to chew on it with you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say, though, I acknowledge the realness of that. And in fact,
thank you.
The podcast episode I did with Courtney for the Abundance Bound podcast.
Okay.
Abundance Bound website. Courtney talks about this. She's like, oh my gosh, when you're in these programs and you're getting this stuff, it's really scary to try to get more income because then all of a sudden, so she talks about.
Okay. I'll listen. Yeah.
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 I mean, that may help. It's just sort of like, okay, other people
are with it.
Through it, but have made it to the other side of it.
And I mean, the thing, I didn't put this down, but like recently I very clearly got that this was a huge piece of my mindset because I wasn't walking around with this every day, but there was part of me saying, well, you'd better keep your income low because, and I was like, oh no, that is not going to serve me at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because ultimately, you have to cultivate the belief in yourself that you can earn more and enough to do the health insurance in some way so that you are motivated to break away from the story of like, oh gosh, I should keep my income low. And even if that's an unconscious story. So I'm glad that came to your consciousness.
Yeah, me too.
And especially because of the circumstances that you are particularly in.
Yeah.
I would say go get a full-time job with benefits or that's a part-time job with benefits. But yeah, just go get it because
that's what it feels like. Okay.
That's going to free you up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're so focused right now on substantial income.
Yes.
Steady, substantial income.
Yep.
That kind of income from a job will likely come from a job with benefits. So yeah, go get that.
And so that's phase one, right? The stabilization is phase one. Yeah. And then I guess down the road, we'll talk about like, well, I have the bennies from the job, but now I want to grow the coaching thing or the acting thing or the radical self-care thing. Okay. Just wanted to
And that can be done in a lot of different ways. But once you get the benefits, get some health stuff taken care of, start stocking away some money.
Yeah.
You know, then you have more options. And then the money, because when you have this full-time job, you're still going to be doing creative opportunities. You're still going to be coming your way and you're still going to be earning money from that stuff too. So that becomes the gravy money and the savings money or the money that will eventually pay for your health insurance.
Okay.
Like, yeah, there's lots. Once you have stability, you have even more options.
Yeah. Is there something to be said for thinking about the timing of getting the full-time gig? I mean, the Obamacare is a 12-month year from January to December. And they, you know, you have to like, you know, brownie swear that is the minute your income changes, you will let them know. But the truth is, even with a gig, it's going to be 36 or 90 days before health insurance kicks in for me, right? Typically with a job.
Mm-hmm.
So am I aiming to start a job in like
October? If it was just like this, if it was like super easy to get a job and you just went into the job for it, then I would worry about the time. But I would just be like, go get a job.
Okay. Hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And then maybe for 3 months, you don't have health insurance.
Oh God.
And then you know, just pay for whatever you need or hold your breath for 3 months and hope for the best.
I can't, like, that makes me panic. Like, I can't.
Or you get COBRA for 3 months. Like,
yes, I got you. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
You just
figure
that shit out.
Okay. And another win that I forgot to put down was your voice is in my head anyway, with graciously always has the red carpet to come into my head. But I this week I literally put my hand over my heart and said, oh, sweetie, you're doing such a good job.
Oh, Karen, I
love you. It made me cry. And you helped me install that because I have not been doing any of that. I've been doing other things, but not that kind of sweetness and, like, you know, talking to the younger part that's terrified. And so that has kicked in, Christine Aller. So thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And how did you make the mental money mindset shift of job not being a four-letter word anymore?
I'm an introspection kind of goddess. So I did a lot of meditation and some journaling and just some thinking about, I crunched a lot of numbers. So like, how many hours do I have to coach, even if I get my full rate, and how am I going to guarantee that? And then how long to pay off my debt? And I'm like, oh, this is, I'm busy scurrying around like chasing little balls of mercury when I need to be staring at the mountain over there. So it was just that giant shift of like the reminder that like getting a job when you're a performer is nowhere even remotely in the universe of failure. And I had it so linked to that. Like, that was the story. I'm a smart girl. I'm a creative girl. If I can't figure this out, I'm a complete, you know, that was the story. And I was like, actually, that story is complete bullshit. Mm-hmm. And so many Oscar, Grammy, Tony, Emmy winners that I could, there's too many to name, are like, I needed to go get a job. I went this long without a job. I must reframe it. It was the whole like Trinity get up thing. It was like, you must start talking to yourself in a different manner. You must. So I just saw like really that my only clear, real path from where I am to power and freedom is going to involve J-O-B. And so it has to become my friend. It has to. That was the shift. Because last time you said to me something about, well, you know, if you don't want the job, people are going to smell that. Nobody's going to hire you. You got to figure out how to want the job. And I'm like, but I don't want a job. And now I'm like, oh, now I want a job because I see where it's going to get me. So,
Oh, good.
So that's what happened. Great. Yeah.
Such growth.
Yep.
Who's the, she's a comedic actress. She was played the mom in the Goldbergs, Wendy McLovin McCleary.
Well, I can see her, the blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was on Bridesmaids. She's hilarious. Bridesmaids. Yeah.
And so her first big gig was Reno 911.
Okay.
She had her job through Reno 911. She edited this journal for this organization.
Yeah.
And that was her job. And she kept that job all through that sitcom. She's just like, I don't know. It's good to have a job. Like, it's good to have another source of income. And oh, I think she only quit it when she got the Goldbergs.
I love that story so much. I cannot even tell you.
So many of those stories.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
And Elizabeth Gilbert, she's like, I never make my art until Eat, Pray, Love. And she's like, until
yeah.
Eat, Pray, Love. And I couldn't have even told you that that was going to be what it was. Like, right. That was a surprise to me. But my plan was just always to have my rent paid by a job so that my art was free to just be. And I didn't put that
pressure. Remember that. Yeah. So good. I'll write those two goddesses' names down, put their pictures up to remind me. So those are two great examples.
This is a really important point, though, too, because we have this mythology of, you know, the starving artist. And like, if you can't have any plan B, because that will demotivate you and you got
to get out
of the can until you make it. And we hear these stories.
Yep.
But there's two things. One, you always hear the stories, and I had $3 left in my account and then I got this role.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but you're only telling us that story because you got the role. Because
yes.
You didn't get the role, who only had $3 in their bank account, are now living with their parents if they're lucky.
Oh, like, God.
We don't hear the stories unless it works out.
Yes, that's correct. Is the what? Who's the played the daughter on Schitt's Creek? I can't remember her name.
I don't know.
Alexis. But she tells the story of like her house had just burned down. She hadn't booked anything in 2 years, and she was sobbing on her way. Annie Murphy, thank you. She was sobbing on her way to the audition, and the audition changed her life. Well, that, I mean, I kind of have been holding on with my claws to like, where's that? That moment is right around the corner, right around the corner. I need the J-O-B. J-O-B is going to be.
It's a nice story.
It is.
She didn't make it happen. It wasn't like her tears and the fire for her house caused the job. No correlation.
Oh, so random.
There.
Yeah.
But the other thing is this whole eat tuna out of a can, go down your bank account to the last $3, be committed to your art.
Mm-mm.
That only works for the people for whom that is intrinsically motivating. There are some people for whom that is absolutely motivating. They
get
great auditions, even with that pressure, because they feed off of it. Like,
yes.
But if you don't work that way, if you are not wired that way and you are anxious about it, that's not going to work for you.
Oh, that's such a great differentiation, because I'm in the latter category.
You're not wired that way.
God, it makes me sad and angry and have panic attacks. It doesn't motivate me. Yeah.
Me too. The thing that allowed me to do my best work and to get acting work was to have something else. All my bills are paid.
Oh, man.
So the acting doesn't have to pay my bills. And that made me so free to do great work. And that's how I got the acting work and the organizing work. Cause I didn't, even when I started organizing, I had two other side jobs that were paying my bills.
Wow.
So I could transition into now only getting my money from acting and organizing. That's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the stability.
Yeah.
Income that allowed me then to make my own income. And that's, that is the road that you are wired for.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Great. Great to hear your journey as well. Just reminds me, you went through it, you've done it. You understand where I am, where we are. It's just so powerful to be able to talk to somebody who's like, I've been exactly there. Really powerful.
Yeah. I cleaned houses. I scrubbed the toilets in my acting school to get a discount on my tuition. Like, I just made it work because I wanted it really bad, but I wanted my rent to be paid.
Paid, covered. Miata shared at the last Q&A, I had never heard this story before, something about like a very dear friend of hers went to a school like where the bus pickup line, the parent pickup line is, and held a sign up that said, "My friend needs some work and she's really good. And here's her." Like, they let her hold a sign, her friend held a sign up to help her get work. And I was like, that just was what we do. Like, it helps me so much to hear the mess, because I sometimes feel like such a hot mess. And I have to remember so many of the people that I adore are previous hot messes. Do you know what I mean? So it's very good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You are fully, fully capable of finding a job out there.
Okay.
Where someone's like, "Oh my God, where have you been all my life?
Okay.
Boxes. Here's my money and here's
work." Yes. If throw money at me, that'd be good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Good, good work.
Thank you. Here I go. Pat, 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 pat. Thank you.
Great.
Yeah.
So the two people I have questions for are not here at the moment. So does anybody, floor is open? Does anybody have anything they want to talk about? Hi, Lydia.
Hello. I have a very, or I think, quick question. My brother-in-law's brother. My brother-in-law's brother hired me a while back for voiceover, and I had never thought about getting like a testimonial. But so I asked him, he wrote a very beautiful thing. Other than putting it on my website, what other like ways could I use that? Like, could I, in my cold reach outs to other companies, put like recent client feedback or
Yeah. You can use it however. Anytime you're trying to communicate to somebody, "Hey, I'm available for hire. Look, somebody hired me and I did well."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Vouching for you. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would use it whenever you feel like you want to attach it, for sure.
Awesome.
I'm so glad you asked.
Thank you. That was it.
Okay. Yeah. Use it at will. Oh, you're confusing Tanya with Trisha, but anybody else? The floor is open.
Can I go, Christine?
Yeah. Yes, Trisha.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you, Karen Eileen, for your sharing. That was really helpful. I am, I guess, on the fence about what, where I'm supposed to be or what I'm supposed to be doing. I discussed with you doing like a 6-week burst for personal training.
Mm-hmm.
I have not taken any action on that at all. I re-listened to that phone call today and like took notes. That was my big like, good job.
Good job.
You move forward. And I also went through my numbers from January through now and my expenses and my earnings, and I'm upside down by an average of $475 a month. I had, you know, booked a commercial last year, so I haven't had to debt, but, you know, just seeing that number was like sobering. And also in some way was like reassuring, because when you know you're upside down, but you don't know by how much, it just feels absolutely terrifying. You know, it's just like, I'm free falling, you know. Once it was like, oh, it's $475 a month, that's, you know, if I add one training session a week, I'm all right. You know, it doesn't have to be like I'm recreating the wheel or something. I have such a resistance to sending out emails. I have such a resistance. I want to cry. I feel like so stupid about that, like so inadequate and dumb. I think there's like such a fear. I don't know, that might be a cop out, but I've just felt very criticized in my family recently. So I have this total fear of being seen right now in like any capacity. And I guess emails feel like part of that. I don't want anybody to know what I'm doing. I don't want anybody to like comment on my life. I feel like I'm slinking around in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's painful and it's keeping me small.
First thing I want to say is thank you for being so honest and candid, because you sitting here right now going, I have so much emotion in me that it's actually coming out as tears. I feel like I have this irrational fear, and this is what I'm feeling. You allowing us to sit with you in this normalizes the feelings that every single person who tries anything entrepreneurial, including artists, feels. I have looked just like you, and those words have come probably out of my mouth exactly in front of Miata. I have cried. I have railed about, so I have been like, what is my problem? Why am I scared to do this? She has been that way with me, just like, I'm trying to do this thing and it's not work, blah, blah, blah. So tears are part of it. Tears are part of this, because trying to create anything, art, a career, cash flow, trying to create anything is giving birth to something that doesn't exist. And then you're bringing forth something that exists. Helen had no clients once upon a time. And just from the words that she allowed to come out of her mouth, she created clients and then created money and is creating a reputation out of nothing. That's giving birth to something. And it's an emotional ride, giving birth to anything. And then when you give birth to something, that thing starts to have a life of its own and it starts to grow and different people hear about it and you can't really control how people receive it. So then there's emotion around that. It's just emotional. And I'm always thankful when people as brave as you are willing to come to this group and share where they're at the moment, even when it's not pretty. Are very victorious, because in this space, you're not seeing that part of my business. I'm seeming very competent. I have the answers, blah, blah, blah. But it's important you give me the opportunity to be like, oh no, I look like that too, depending on the day, you know? So I just want to say, this is part of business. And until you're brave enough to be like, I'm having this problem and I'm feeling like this and I'm thinking irrationally and blah, 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 you can't do the business. So Karen Eileen doing the work to shift her brain into, oh, I actually want a job. That's doing the work. That's doing business. So you right now, Trisha, are doing business. And I want to affirm that, not just to make you feel better, but to affirm it because it's real. So what I'm hearing you say is you're feeling super tender right now because you've just gone through a period where your family has given you feedback that's made you feel really raw. It didn't sound pleasant. And the thought of like, okay, let's just tell people what I'm doing and let them just be able to say whatever they think about it. That feels like great and fun. Yeah, no, it doesn't. But how can you recontextualize the business emails that you'll be sending out to get clients differentiated from this experience that you just went through? how might this actually yield what would make you feel good, which is positive feedback? Because we think when we're really tender, like, oh, well, I don't want to send anything out because I could get more of this horrible feedback. Ah, but you could get absolutely affirming feedback. And people being like, I want that. Here's some money. That is what will actually make you feel good. Is not the hiding isn't going to. The doing something to possibly get affirming feedback. But in order to do that, you have to be managing your mind and saying that these people are not my family. They're not necessarily going to react the same way. You know, the stories that are going to get you brave enough to press send. So do you have any like little granules of starting of stories that might be able to tilt you to feeling more enthusiastic or willing at least to send out some emails?
Think about feedback I've gotten recently from current personal training clients, which is, you know, thank God for you. You know, I was in pain when you got here. I'm not in pain now. I wouldn't do this if it weren't for you. You know, just that feeling so much better, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So just remember how I'm adding value to people's lives.
How much did we talk about you charging for that 6-week sprint?
$1,800.
How much?
$1,800.
Okay. So technically, if you got just if everything stayed the same as it was now and you got six of those, you would be not underwater for the next 12 months. And if you got one of them a month, you'd be fine then. More than fine. You'd have extra. So I want you to think of, tell me a little bit about the person, your next client. Who is she? What is she feeling right now?
She's feeling really frustrated because she's a competent, capable person who is kind of a get shit done kind of a person. But that aspect of her life just feels like unfigure outable. Yeah.
Me. That was me.
Yeah. That's why we hire anybody, right? It's like, shit, this one area, I can't solve this one. So she doesn't have the bandwidth to come up with her own workouts. Maybe she doesn't have the fitness knowledge to come up with her own workouts. Even if she had like an app or whatever to follow, she can't sort of get herself to show up to the appointment with herself. So she needs the accountability. She needs the knowledge. And I'm good company. Like, just, you know, besides being very, sorry. I mean, besides having done this for 22 years, so I have a lot of knowledge about the body. I'm a great cheerleader. I'm a great motivator. I like to see people feel good about themselves. And I love watching them sort of have that breakthrough where they're like, this thing that felt like it was just never going to become a habit became a habit. It's that identity shift, you know? It's like, I never thought of myself as an athlete or as somebody who works out, and now I do, and how empowering that is and how it, you know, bleeds into every area of your life, really. Sorry, I'm so teary today.
No, you never have to apologize for your feelings. And this woman really, really wants to work with you. She wants to work with someone like you, who's going to be so focused on making sure she feels good during this whole thing. Good physically, good emotionally, which is the most important part, actually. She is going to love your sense of humor. She's just going to be like, oh my God, we're two peas in a pod. I just love your approach. I just feel so cared for. She needs you. And the more you turn your attention and pull your brain back from staring at your family and pull it back and say, no, 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 we're here for her. And I think you should write an email that starts, okay, so you're just writing to each of your friends individually, each of the people you know. You don't have to write to everyone. If there's people who are like, oh, roll eyes, they won't take this the wrong way. But I would start the email out. Dear Lydia, I'm writing this email because I know this woman is out there and I'm trying to find her. And I thought, and she is such good quality that I thought the easiest way to find her is to ask my good quality friends, because good quality knows good quality. Let me tell you about her. And I want you to write just what you said. You can re-listen to this recording to get that verbiage, because you said it perfectly. And then you say, if you know her, could you please let her know I exist? Right before that line, that's kind of like the closing line. And thank you so much. Hope you're doing well. Thanks for letting me invade your inbox. Right before that, you're just going to have a tiny little paragraph, tiny, like two sentences. You know, after 22 years of training, I have formulated a 6-week burst that dials in this and this and this. And that woman is going to love it. I know she will. And then a link to where maybe they can find out even a free about.me page where you just kind of like describe it a little bit more. This is how we'll work together, break it all down, have the price, but you don't need to put the price in that email. But that's it. That's the email. P.S. Happy to answer any questions if you have them. Or P.S. Here's a little, you know, or P.S. This is what one of my other clients have said, you know, and do a little testimonial right there. That's it. And what if you just send one of those a day for the next 30 days? Or 30 in one day, if you just want to get it. I mean, the more you send, the faster the wheel can turn. But if emotionally right now, one a day is what you can do, fine. I would maybe do one a day until you feel like you could do two a day. And then do two a day until you feel like you could do three. Do you think that feels doable?
Yeah, that does. My chest has settled down. Yeah.
Yeah. If from now on you only ever got 6 to 12 burst clients, is that what we're calling it? A burst? Yeah. That's it. For you to coast like 6 to 12 a year, 6 a year. Surely, out of the billions of people on this planet, there are 6 to 12 women who are like, oh my God, where have you been all my life? Please, please. And likely a few of those will do more than one. So, like you. Or they'll do a burst and then they'll hire you for a more individualized thing at a slightly higher an hourly rate. Okay, so I look forward to hearing back, because that's going to work. And you just keep sending emails until you get the clients you need. You just keep sending emails. You get a client, great. You keep sending emails. hopefully that client will refer somebody else. But you just keep sending those emails until you have a waiting list. Even if it's only one a day, one email a day is 365 emails.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for allowing us to have this exchange.
You're such a blessing. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. My pleasure. Ileana, you're here. Okay. Cash flow kitten. Not sure at the moment what her side business will be, but I'm going to read this. Okay. She wrote, I'm a little embarrassed to ask this question. I love things that start like that, because if you're a little embarrassed to ask this question, I just know like 1400 other people will listen to this conversation and be like, well, I'm really glad she asked, because I have that question too. You've been holding on to it for weeks, hoping you could crack it on your own, but haven't. So thank you in advance for your guidance. You're very welcome. I was very excited to get this. So my fastest path to cash at the moment is a new play commission that you have as a playwright. First of all, congratulations. That's awesome. Once you turn in your draft, you're guaranteed to be paid the second portion of your commission fee. So you've been paid a first portion already, right? Okay, mm-hmm. So turn in just a draft and then you'll get your second payment. And then the theater will give you notes, and then when you revise it, you'll get a third installment. Your cash flow has been slowing and you're getting to the point, I'm getting to the point where I really need that payout from the commission this month. But knowing all of that, I'm still just not writing the play, or at least not prioritizing it in the way I think I should. And I know the word should is getting me in trouble here. Of course, every single other task in the world has become vastly more interesting than this one task that will pay me. And this project is competing with three other projects that are time-bound with hard external deadlines and other people involved creating accountability. You have an episodic lab, you're directing a short film, and you're prepping for a play premiere. And the play premiere is the only other thing that would bring in the money. So you got the play premiere and you've got this draft that could bring in money. You haven't done nothing. You're 35 pages into a rough draft after 21 hours of work on the play, but working on the play isn't feeling good. It's not feeling exciting. I find myself dreading it, which feels ridiculous. And then I get frustrated with myself for not being grateful about having an art thing that's going to pay me money. I've tried setting goals around it in terms of hours worked or pages written, but I always fall short. I think I may have set myself up for disappointment by setting benchmarks that were too high too early on. And my lizard brain has been shouting, why can't you write a play in a weekend like you used to do in grad school? because lizard brain, I have to do my dishes.
Or,
why did you pick such a concept for this play that's so hard? This is impossible. And I'm trying to remind myself that it doesn't have to be anywhere close to perfect. I just have to turn in something so that I can get paid. But that counter argument isn't working very well. I've also realized that I've been thinking of this commission as a safety net. But once I actually turn it in, that safety net will be gone. Okay. I would love to find a way of talking to myself about this that helps me feel better and more motivated about the project. This is so interesting. It's fascinating, isn't it? This is such a great example of what our brain will do and won't do when we're asking it to do something, and how difficult it can be to even set metrics and then just be like, I didn't do it. Well, we humans are fascinating. But it's very, very, very important to remind ourselves we are not robots. We are emotional. We are irrational. We have design. And if you're creative on top of being emotional, that's just human, emotional and irrational. And then creative on top of that, we're, oh, but I feel like doing this now. And we're all wired differently. Like, yeah, we're not robots. Mm-hmm. As much as Jeff Bezos would like us all to be. So you hit on two, I think, really important things. One is that the three other projects have external sources of accountability. Mm-hmm. And it's so, I mean, other people are waiting on you and you are not one to disappoint. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to take you finding somebody else to attach to this playwriting, not to help you with it, but to attach to it, mm-hmm. of like, I have to get this done. And we have to check in on a daily or weekly or whatever basis. And it has to be someone that you would be really embarrassed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can't be a friend. It has to be something where if I told them that I was going to do this and then I didn't do it, I would like need to hide for the rest of my life from them. And I don't want to do that. I want them to be proud of me.
Okay. That's really good.
Because it just won't work. Competing against things with external sources of accountability. Mm-mm. Mm. And then the other thing is this weird little story around like, oh, but as long as I haven't turned in my draft, I have the potential to get this chunk of money. And the minute I do, then I get the money. And then I know I'm going to spend the money because I need the money. And then what do I do? Yeah, it's fun to have safety nets. It's fun. And it's hard when it's like, ooh, I got this inheritance, or ooh, I got this money from this project, or ooh, I could get money from this project, or I could get money from grandma if I only ask, but I don't want to ask because I only get one ask. It feels safe to have like our, you know, land, call a friend, like all those little things still in place. But part of doing life and doing business is sometimes you have to use the money. Sometimes you have to use the thing and just be like, I need it now and I'm going to make the best of it. I remember there was a time, my husband is slightly more like into, at the time, especially he was like a business major in college. And so shortly after our graduation, he's like, you need a mutual fund. You need an IRA, like all this kind of a Roth IRA, like all this stuff. Before I met Miata, you know, and I had opened, so I had several, I had three. And then at one point, the littlest one had like $3,700 in it. And I was at a point where I was working on a project and I wanted to keep going and I needed money for like rent. And I'm like, I'm going to fucking cash in this thing. And there wasn't that many penalties. It was like but I'm like, I want that money. Like that money will help me do something that will get me more money. But it was like, I've heard all the stories. Oh, you shouldn't do that. You should keep it. But I did it. And I'm so happy I did it. And it was the right thing to do. And it's like, it's my money and I'm going to use it for something. So you have this opportunity. It's your money. And sometimes when you hold on to little chits like that, you prevent yourself from getting bigger ones.
Ooh,
this play commission's lovely. That's great. But I hope your next one's three times that amount.
Me too. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So how did you get this play commission was my first question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I figured this was too much context to put in the thing, but I actually have two. So the first one I got in 2021, it was a theater who knew me and liked my work. And they actually, like, the outgoing literary manager gave me this commission, like, before he turned in his resignation. So like, he was like, this was my last thing I did before I left. So then he like gave me that commission and then left. But part of what that meant was that they kind of forgot about me. So I got the commission and they're supposed to have a meeting with you where you pitch them what you're going to do. It took 3 months to get that meeting on the books because they were like, oh shit, yeah. But that's been great. And then the other one I got last year, sorry, doubling back, the one I got in 2021 technically was due in June of last year. It's common for playwrights to turn things in late. There's like lore about people who wait 12 years. And so by that metric, I'm only 10 years. I'm 10 years early by that metric, which is great. But the other one of them I got last May, which technically would be due, they said like 18 months ish. So I think it's helping me a little bit that I do have another safety net commission thing. But the way that things are looking right now with the income for the rest of the year, I'm going to also have to write that play before the end of the year. So my two safety balloons will be gone or cashed in, I guess, not gone. They'll have turned into money.
Yeah. What if we stopped calling them safety balloons?
Mm-hmm.
And we just called them commissions because you're a fucking paid creative and you get payments from creative work and you're going to continue to get payments for creative work. And you're sort of like, these were once in a life, like nothing like this can ever happen to me again.
Mm-hmm. That's already happened twice. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that already happened twice. And you got these two interesting opportunities on top of that job thing that you interviewed for. You didn't get it, but you were like, I didn't even know it existed. Like there have been a lot of things that have kind of come into your space this year, like meaning like the past couple months that you couldn't have even planned for. Like yeah. What if your life could have just more of this stuff? And what if the universe is up there going, I don't know, like we gave her two of these to shoot. She doesn't seem like she wants anymore. They're kind of freaking her out. Maybe, okay, so maybe we should just stop this like bombarding her with cash opportunities. We'll just wait. We'll just wait. Let's see.
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking it as like, these are the last ones. And I'm not safe with if I don't have them. But what if the safety is like, I'm going to do these and write the play, and that'll put more stuff into the universe that, I mean, more stuff out in the world that the universe can use to get your art out there. And this is actually you practicing what it feels like to be a working artist. Because here's the other thing. What's guaranteed as a working artist is that your income is going to go up and down. It's going to be erratic, and you don't always know when it's coming or from where it's coming. But if you're working enough to where you can live off your art income, you have to spend your art income.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be like, well, okay, I'm spending this. So more, I'm trusting and working towards more coming. I'm growing. So more is coming. Like there's a little trust factor here that you might be being offered to build your muscle of in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And what stories would you have to release that would allow you writing these plays to be fun?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea?
I think part of it is the, like, this should have been done in a weekend. Like I think I'm beating myself up for not doing this really quickly, which is funny because doing it really quickly doesn't sound fun. Like there's been something about the speed. And I think I've also been, it's been the kind of thing where like, this has been at the top of my to-do list for like 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I feel like I've been neglecting it. I have been neglecting it. So maybe the story of like, you've already kicked this project and it's mad at you now, or like the story of it should have happened overnight. Why is it not done yet? I think that the theater is mad at me, even though I know they're not. The literary manager keeps reaching out and he's like, hey, I just want to let you know, this is not a nudge. I just want to know how you're doing. And I'm like, this is totally a nudge. He's furious.
They don't want to release. They're earning interest off that money.
Right. They're
fine.
That's such a good point. You're
maybe
right.
He's reaching out to see how you're doing, hoping you're going to push the deadline so they can use the money for something else for a while.
You're right.
Yeah, you don't know.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. And I think something else I realized while you were talking is that I've also been thinking of it as like, oh man, like I'm going to turn in this commission play and then that's the end of it. But the reason that theaters commission plays is to produce them. Like the other option is that they commission it and then they love what I do and then they produce it and then it turns into another check. Oh yeah. Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking.
I literally forgot that that's why theaters commission plays.
And well, even if they don't produce it, there's going to be several people who are going to read it. And that's like you doing an audition for all of those people with your work. It's like, and who knows who they know? And they may know a theater who wants something like this. And the, you don't know, but the universe can't move your shit around if you don't give up the shit to be moved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And also the person who's calling you to be like, how you doing? That's their job. Their job is to call you and say how you're doing. Their boss is like, can you please make, you know, why don't you cycle through all these people we have the offers out to and see how they're doing? And the person's just doing their job. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what if you started telling yourself the story? I have all the time that I need to give birth to these plays. And I'm going to give birth to two fine looking plays. They don't have to be perfect. They're great. They're going to be raised by more than just me. They're going to go through iterations and massaging. And by the time anybody sees them, they'll have been directed and dramaturged and notes on and revised, and it'll just be lovely. But I have all the time I need right now to do this. And I'd like to do it now. Now is the time. So I think what will move you through this block is you creating another set of stories. I would write the stories down and probably post them up on a wall. This is what I feel about these plays. These are my thoughts that are going to lead me through. And then I would choose someone to be your play commission facilitator.
Okay.
Someone, an old professor, I don't know, just someone that you're like a little nervous to ask, but that you're just like, holy fuck, I will not disappoint this person. There has to be some gravitas there. And it could be a colleague, as long as it is someone that if you say you're going to do something, you will do it. Because even if they cut you slack, you're like, no. Because Miata and I worked really well in that respect. And we weren't friends at first. We just had mutual people in common, but we were two women who wanted each other's respect. So it's like, oh, well, I'm going to show up to our meetings having done my shit that I said I was going to do last month, because I would like you to think I'm worthy and cool. And I want you to refer me to your people. And we just wanted each other's respect in the beginning. And so we were like, showing up, and then we earned each other's respect. And then because we respected each other, we really also liked each other. And then, you know, so it needs to be somebody like that, though, where you're like, and what you're asking them is, I have these projects that I need to complete before the end of this year. One will likely be done sooner. Then I will start on the other one, but it'll probably be before the end of the year that you're done. But by the end of the year is the final deadline. And I need to meet with you every 2 weeks, just for 15 minutes. And here's what will happen. I will tell you what I plan to do for the week ahead. So then the next meeting, I will tell you if I did that. And if I didn't do it, I will tell you what prevented me from doing it. And you may question me on that.
Okay. That's your
right. We have time. Well, what the fuck did that mean? What did you do instead of that? Like, and this is about, and then the other thing. So let me ask you though, because this is also important. So you have, where is it? You have the episodic lab, you have the short film, and you have the play premiere. So what are the deadlines for those projects?
The episodic lab is a 6-week process. It started 2 weeks ago. It will end the first week of August. Those meetings are twice a week for 2 hours, Mondays and Thursdays.
Okay.
I will have a little bit of revising to do in between, but I'm guessing that's going to be like 15 hours. The directing the short, that's the big kahuna one that's been really, really taking up a lot of energy. We are shooting on August 18th and 19th. That one's going to be intensive. That's the danger project right now. Yeah, the hard deadlines for shooting are August 18th and 19th. I think it will heat up the most in the 2 weeks before that. So I'm trying to take advantage of July. And then afterwards, after that, it becomes post-production, which mm-hmm. will be less intensive. But then also immediately after that is when the play kicks in. I'm leaving on August 27th. That's a 6 week process from August 27th to October 8th. That will be like the good old 8 hours of rehearsal a day, 6 days a week. From experience with my last production, I really hurt myself by trying to do something other than rehearsing the play during the period of rehearsing the play. Mm-hmm. I think I can set myself a really light, modest goal during that time, but I think those will kind of be blackout dates.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to finish the first commission before and do the second commission after.
Yep. Okay. That sounds 100%, because you're also getting paid for
the production.
Some money for the production.
Yes. Okay. The funny thing about that is that I don't know when the check will come.
Have you asked?
I have. The last production I did, I still haven't been paid for, and the show went up in April. So that one was a big issue, and the issue is hopefully going to be resolved. I'm having a call with my reps on Tuesday, and we'll ask about that repeatedly. But like, with the last couple, I've hurt myself by assuming this before. The last couple productions I've had, I haven't been paid until like 4 weeks into rehearsal.
Okay. So are these contracts that are signed stipulate, or
the reason it's been taking longer is that the contracts are still being written, and the payment comes upon signing. And so like, if the contract is still being drafted, there's like a goodwill understanding that I'm getting on this plane for eventual payment. But I don't know if it's because I'm like less important to my agents or because there are things that need to be sorting out in other areas. But so far, of the two production experiences I've had so far, I've gotten on a plane without a contract signed.
Okay. And your agents are just sort of not taking care of that?
They're acting like it's normal. So I kind of thought it was, but I don't know if it is. But
What if your lawyer contacted your agents and said, "Hi, I'm just calling to get Elena's paperwork. When can we expect to have that?"
That sounds nice. I'll make a note of that.
A friend who has a lawyer.
I have a lawyer. Yeah. I can sick my lawyer on him. Yeah. Go ahead, Claire, get him.
Yes. Go get my contracts. I don't want to get on a plane again without contracts signed. And so I know where my fucking money is. This is just business. It's not personal. I mean, if you're afraid that they'll fire you because you're asking for your contract, you don't want to get on a plane and go somewhere where there's just vagueness. That's where shit happens. No, this is, you're well within your rights, but now that you've asked nicely, I wouldn't even ask again. You've already asked. So now have your lawyer do it with your agents. Hi, she's working on a play commission. So she asked me to follow up and get all of this tied up before she gets on a plane, blah, blah, blah. That's what lawyers are for.
Okay, thank you.
And that's what agent, and then the agents, what agents are for is then agents call the other people and be like,
yeah, bang on the table. But
you don't think, yeah, that's their job. Because aren't they going to get 10% of this?
Sure are. Yeah.
Well, not if the money, you could tell them, look, I'd love you to get 10%, but the 10% needs to be the work you do to get it signed before I get on the plane. Mm-hmm. If I get on the plane without this sign, then why would I be giving you 10%? Because then I would just be doing the agenting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to say these things, but your energy.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my agents and my job. It's like, you don't want them and you don't want the job.
Mm-hmm.
Just so anyway. Okay. So the concept, do you like the concept that you pitched them of this play? Are you sick of, are you like, I don't even like the idea anymore?
I'm intimidated by the idea.
Okay.
I do like it. I've been complaining, as one does. And when my friends are like, what's the play about? And I tell them, they're like, aw. And that actually has been making me feel better because I'm like, oh, maybe it is a good idea. I'm daunted by it, but I do think it's a good idea, but I don't have it figured out yet. Like, yeah, I feel like I've been banging my head against it and I don't have it figured out yet. But I know that the way I figure it out is by working on it, not by hiding from it.
Yeah. And how in July, what do you need to write it? Do you like to write when you have three solid days of uninterrupted time to write? Do you like to write in bits and pieces every day?
I feel like I've sort of lost track of what my preferences are in a way. I think I like 4-hour stretches on like a series of consecutive days, but I can't do the, I'm not usually the like 10 hours in a cage person. And I struggle with increments smaller than 2 hours.
Yeah. So this is all really good to know. So can you look at your schedule for the next 3 weeks and go, how many days can I carve out 4-hour stretches? See how many. And then let's say you get 12. Then you go, okay, what do I need to move myself along in these 12? Like, what are the goals for the 12? Do I need to spend the first one on outlining? Do I need to spend the first one on the third act? Do I like map it kind of loosely out? So you're not just showing up going, what?
I've been doing that. Great.
Yeah. Like, approach it from a project management thing before you dive into the writing. And then maybe the first or second 4-hour stretch is you going for a walk and just thinking about this dedicated thought to the play, not thoughts about the spin cycle of it. So it's not like you have to spend those. I don't want you putting the stress on yourself of like, sit at the typewriter, type the words on the page. Cause that's not what writing always looks like. Sometimes writing looks like taking a walk and thinking about it.
Yeah.
And maybe every 4-hour stretch starts with a 1-hour walk and then you come back for 2.5 hours of writing. But this is an interesting, and by the way, you are younger, I'm sorry, but welcome to the rest of your life where you can't bang things out in weekends. wait till you can't even do an all-nighter. Oh boy, does your life change. You're like, oh fuck. Okay. That's just not an option. Good to know. Good to know. But it happens. But what this is also from the big picture perspective, teaching you is building muscles of having to produce. Because if you were working in television, you have to write. And this is also in acting. Sometimes you don't get the amount of time you want to prepare. You just got to do it. I remember this, the story of the show 24, which was filmed, you know, 24 hours in a day, where the 24 episodes of the show, and this woman got cast. She was one of the leads for the season. She was the bad guy. She got cast replacing another person who was cast. So she was cast on a Friday night from LA or from New York. She had to fly to Los Angeles overnight. She was on set the next day. Like that Saturday morning, they were like, we love the outfit you're wearing. So she wore that outfit the whole, they bought, you know, replacement, but she wore those clothes because it's the whole one day. So she's wearing the one outfit. And she was like, I just dove into that part. And she did a great job, but it was like, she's like, I had never not prepared. I'd never just kind of walked on set. They're like, you look great. Let's do your hair and makeup. Like, and she's like, I learned I could do it. So sometimes when you look at your schedule and go, okay, I have 12 4-hour blocks, or I have 6 4-hour blocks, whatever you can squeeze out and rearrange shit and make sure those 12-hour block, I mean, those 4-hour blocks are when you're fresh. End of the day, I got 4 hours at the end of the day, my brain will be fried. No. It has to be freshy hours. You say, that's what I have for this project. And I am going to trust that I have exactly the amount of time I need. What if this play is a 6-block play? Like, make it that, make it fit. Sometimes we get to use the amount of time the project wants us to use. And sometimes we make a project that fits into the amount of budget or time that we have. And that's what you're doing with your short film. Of course, it's like, well, it starts filming on this day and that's what's going to happen. Same thing with this play. And you're just building that muscle. So if you can wake up and be like, I'm so grateful I have a condensed period of time in which to write this play, because it will be, it'll teach me some things, and it's only the first draft.
Yeah.
I'm going to work out the kinks, because I'm going to take my hand off my neck and stop choking my creativity to death. And I'm going to forget that I've could have spread this out over the last couple months. Just go, it wasn't meant to be,
mm-hmm.
because I was meant to build this muscle. And that's why I'm here doing this now.
Mm-hmm.
And this beautiful next stretch of 5 months that you're going to have, July, August, September, October, that you're going to be doing, my God, I mean, this is the life you've asked for, Ileana. Writing, directing, acting, being paid for this shit. Yes, it's turbulent. Yes, you don't have as much time as you want. Yes, you have to still do your laundry. But this is the life you wanted. Go get your commissions. Go get your lawyer on the job. Do business. Do art. Get your commissions facilitator, your playwriting commissions facilitator, and do this shit. And think of when we're sitting here in November, looking back over your, how much of you have you put into this world that the universe can now work with?
Mm-hmm.
This is so exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you so, so, so much, Christine. Yeah. That's huge. That's so, so helpful. Thank you. This is exactly what I needed.
Thank you guys for hanging out. We went a little over, but I thought it was worth it. So, mwah, mwah. See you next Sunday, everybody. Hi, Carolyn. Yeah, you're welcome, Trisha. Hi, Helen.